it is Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. In January 1975, Karen Campbell, a 23-year-old nurse from Michigan, was in Aspen, Colorado with her fiancé for what should have been a carefree ski vacation. She was young, ambitious, and newly in love, spending the week at a lodge near Snowmass Ski Area, surrounded by friends, tourists, and fresh mountain snow. But on the night of January 12th, Karen stepped away inside the lodge for just a moment and never came back. In a crowded ski resort town, without a scream or a trace, Karen vanished into the dark, becoming part of one of the most chilling true crime cases in American history. To really understand Carolyn Campbell's final trip to Colorado, you have to understand what Aspen and Snowmass represented in 1975. Because back then, Aspen wasn't just a ski town. It was becoming a symbol of a certain kind of American freedom and glamour. A place where wealthy professionals, adventurous young couples, celebrities, trust fund kids, ski bums, and counterculture drifters all somehow existed together in the same snowy mountain town. And honestly, there was probably nowhere else in America quite like it. Aspen itself had started as a silver mining town in the late 1800s before collapsing economically when the mining boom died out. For decades, it sat relatively quiet in the mountains. But after World War II, everything changed. Skiing exploded in popularity across America, and Aspen reinvented itself into a luxury ski destination. By the 1960s and early 70s, it had transformed into one of the most fashionable winter vacation spots in the country. And Snowmass, where Karen was staying, was the newer, shinier sibling to Aspen. Snowmass Ski Area officially opened in 1967, less than a decade before Karen's trip. At the time, it was considered modern and upscale, specifically designed to handle the growing wave of ski tourism flooding into Colorado. Developers envisioned it as this sprawling resort village built around the fantasy of the perfect ski vacation. Slopeside lodges, fireplaces, cocktail lounges, ski schools, outdoor promenades, and breathtaking mountain scenery everywhere you looked. By 1975, Aspen and Snowmass had become cultural magnets. You had doctors attending conventions alongside college kids hitchhiking through Colorado. Wealthy tourists from New York and California drank champagne beside hardcore skiers who spent all day on black diamond runs and all night partying in crowded bars smelling like cigarettes, wool jackets, and spill beer. And fashion was absolutely part of the culture. The mid-70s ski scene had this unmistakable aesthetic. Brightly colored ski suits, oversized tinted goggles, fur-lined moon boots, knit turtlenecks, shearling jackets, leather gloves, giant sunglasses, and long flowing hair sticking out from wool caps. Skiing during that era wasn't just a sport, it was social theater. There are photos from Aspen in the 70s that almost look like fashion editorials. People wanted to be seen there, and Aspen leaned into that image. The town had already started attracting celebrities, musicians, and wealthy socialites by that point. Hunter S. Thompson famously lived nearby during the early 70s and even ran for sheriff of Pitkin County in 1970 on his wild freak power campaign. John Denver lived in Aspen. Movie stars vacationed there. There was a strange collision between old money luxury and rebellious counterculture that gave Aspen a personality unlike traditional elite resorts on the East Coast. During the day, tourists skied across massive mountain runs surrounded by the Rockies. Snowmass especially became known for its wide terrain and family-friendly slopes. Visitors took ski lessons, rode lifts through pine forests, and spent hours moving between lodges, warming up with hot drinks beside giant fireplaces. And at night, the atmosphere shifted. The bars and lounges filled up. Resorts hosted dinners, live music, dancing, and cocktail hours. People drank whiskey and wine while snow fell outside the windows. Medical conventions and corporate retreats often overlapped with vacation crowds, creating this strange mix of professionalism and vacation excess, all happening under one roof. And that's part of why Karen's disappearance felt so shocking to the people at the time, because Aspen and Snowmass represented escape. They represented wealth, recreation, youth, and safety. These weren't places where people associated with predators lurking in the shadows. Karen vanished in the middle of what should have been one of the safest possible environments, a crowded ski resort filled with tourists and professionals. When you picture Karen there, it's easy to imagine exactly what she saw that weekend. Snow-covered mountains glowing under floodlights at night, crowded lodge fireplaces, tourists walking through breezeways carrying skis over their shoulders, the sound of lift machinery in the distance, the smell of wood smoke and cold mountain air. It probably felt exciting, sophisticated, romantic, especially for a 23-year-old nurse from Michigan building a future with her fiancé. And that's what makes the presence of a serial killer there feel so deeply disturbing in retrospect. Because Ted Bundy understood environments like Aspen perfectly. He knew how to blend into places where people felt comfortable. He looked educated, clean-cut, and trustworthy. Exactly the kind of man nobody would immediately fear in an upscale ski resort full of doctors, professionals, and vacationers. In many ways, Aspen in 1975 was the perfect hunting ground for someone like him. Busy enough for anonymity, affluent enough that people let their guard down, and transient enough that strangers didn't stand out. People came there to relax, to flirt, to ski, to drink, to reinvent themselves for a weekend in the mountains. So nobody imagined that one of the most notorious serial killers in American history was walking among them through snow-covered breezeways of the Wildwood Inn. But we're not here to talk about Ted Bundy. He's been talked about enough. Let's get to know Karen Campbell before evil walked into her life.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Before Karen Campbell ever became connected to one of the most infamous criminals in true crime history, she was simply a young woman building a life that, by all accounts, seemed full of promise. Karen Eileen Campbell was born on September 20th, 1951, in Garden City, Michigan, and grew up in a close-knit Midwestern family alongside her parents, Robert and Adrienne Campbell, and several siblings. And when you look at the details of her early life, there's something very relatable and familiar about her story. She wasn't some mysterious drifter or thrill-seeker. She was the kind of young woman a lot of people knew in the late 60s and early 70s. Social, hardworking, outdoorsy, stylish, and trying to figure out adulthood while balancing career, love, and independence. She attended Dearborn High School and graduated in 1969. Her yearbook reportedly listed her involvement in choir, intramural activities, and ski club, which already gives you a pretty clear picture of who she was. Karen wasn't isolated or withdrawn. She was involved, active, athletic, someone who liked being around people. And skiing, especially, would become a real passion for her later in life. Friends and family described Karen as warm, intelligent, and deeply caring, the kind of person naturally drawn toward helping others. She was petite, stylish, and pretty in that very effortless early 70s way, with shoulder-length brown hair and what people often remembered as an easy warmth about her. But more than anything, people seemed to remember how she made them feel. There are some victims in true crime stories where the descriptions stay surface level. With Karen, the descriptions felt personal. People consistently talked about her kindness, her patience, her compassion. And so, a career in nursing seemed to fit her perfectly. As a young woman, Karen pursued a career as a registered nurse in Michigan, eventually working at Beaumont Hospital in Farmington Hills. And at only 23 years old, she already had a respected professional future ahead of her. Now that's something that stands out when you really think about it. 23 is so young. Most people are still trying to figure out who they are at that age. But Karen already seemed to have direction. She had stability. She had a career that mattered. And by multiple accounts, nursing wasn't just a paycheck for her. It reflected who she was as a person. She genuinely enjoyed caring for people. Coworkers and loved ones described her as compassionate and patient, someone who is calm and nurturing by nature. The kind of nurse you'd probably remember years later because she made a difficult moment much less frightening. Now, outside of work, Karen loved traveling, skiing, and spending time outdoors. She was social and adventurous without seeming reckless. Now, Colorado, especially Aspen and Snowmass, would have felt like the perfect vacation for someone like her. Beautiful mountains, skiing, fireplaces, winter parties, and that glamorous ski town atmosphere that was iconic in the 70s. And at the same time, her personal life also seemed to be moving towards something serious and hopeful. Karen was engaged to Dr. Raymond Gadowski, a cardiologist from Farmington Hills. The two had reportedly been living together for about a year before the Colorado trip, building what friends described as a genuinely loving relationship. Despite the fact that Raymond was 9 years older and divorced with children, and Karen reportedly had a close relationship with his son and daughter. That detail always says a lot to me, because I know blended family dynamics are not always easy, and I imagine it's even harder when you're young. But by most accounts, Karen embraced that role naturally. Raymond affectionately called her Care, or sometimes Cams, and the people around them largely viewed them as happy together. Karen seemed excited about where her life was heading. She had a respected career, a fiancé she loved, travel plans, independence, and this feeling of stepping into adulthood in a very real way. And there's something bittersweet about that, because it sounds like she was right at the edge of the future she'd worked hard for. Like any relationship, theirs wasn't perfect. Some reports suggest the two occasionally argued about when to officially get married. Karen reportedly wanted to move forward a little more quickly, while Raymond seemed less urgent about setting a date. But honestly, that feels very human, very normal, not scandalous or dramatic. Just two people trying to navigate very different timelines in a serious relationship. And even with those little disagreements, friends still described them as committed to each other and building a future together. Nothing in Karen's life at that point suggested any instability or danger. If anything, it sounded like a young woman entering one of the happiest and most exciting chapters of her life, which makes what happened next feel even harder to comprehend.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
In January of 1975, Carolyn Campbell arrived in Snowmass Village, Colorado, with her fiancé, Dr. Gadowski, and his two children. for what was supposed to be a winter getaway filled with skiing, mountain air, and family time. They were staying at the Wildwood Inn near the Snowmass ski area, while Raymond attended a medical convention being held there. For Karen, it probably felt like exactly the kind of escape she needed. She'd been excited about the trip for weeks. Now, even though Karen was still recovering from the flu when they arrived on January 11th, she reportedly wasn't going to let that ruin her vacation. People later remembered that she still looked tired and slightly under the weather, but she pushed through it anyway, determined to enjoy herself. And I can definitely relate to that, especially on a trip you've planned and looked forward to. You tell yourself you'll rest later. You'll power through because you don't want to miss the experience. Now, the group purchased 5 days of ski lessons and quickly settled into vacation mode. Karen spent her first day there sightseeing around Snowmass and skiing with Raymond's children. She was naturally nurturing, so it's easy to picture her fitting comfortably into that stepmom role. Bundled up in ski gear, helping the kids, laughing in the snow, trying to enjoy the mountains despite feeling a little under the weather. And for a while, everything about the trip appeared completely normal. On January 12th, the day Karen disappeared, the group spent time skiing again before heading to dinner that evening at a nearby restaurant close to the lodge. Witnesses later remembered Karen seemed relaxed and social that night. While the others drank cocktails, Karen reportedly ordered milk because her stomach was still bothering her from the flu. It's such a small detail, but those tiny, ordinary moments always make cases like this feel more real somehow. At one point during dinner, Karen joked with friends about trading magazines, offering her copy of Viva magazine in exchange for someone else's Playboy. Everyone was laughing, talking, warming up after a day out in the cold. Nothing about the evening suggested danger. Nothing suggested it would become the final night of her life. After dinner, the group returned to the Wildwood Inn around 6 p.m. Witnesses later described Karen relaxing near the fire in the hotel lounge, talking and socializing with the others. And the lodge itself was busy with convention attendees and vacationers moving in and out. It was not isolated. It wasn't some remote empty cabin in the woods. There were literally people everywhere. At around 8:30 p.m., Karen told Raymond she was going upstairs to their second floor room to retrieve her magazine. She left the lounge area alone, walking toward the elevators and the hallway leading to her room. Multiple witnesses later recalled seeing her walking through the lodge. And then? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. She never came back downstairs. Now, at first, Raymond reportedly wasn't immediately alarmed. A few minutes passed, then a little more time. Eventually, he went upstairs to check on her himself. When he entered the room, the magazine Karen had supposedly gone to retrieve was still sitting exactly where she had left it earlier that day. That's the moment everything shifted, because suddenly it was obvious something was wrong. There were no signs that Karen had packed up and left voluntarily. Her skis were still in the room. Her belongings were untouched. There was no indication of an argument or a struggle. She had simply vanished somewhere between the hotel lounge and her second floor room in a crowded ski lodge. Police were called almost immediately. Investigators began an exhaustive search through the Wildwood Inn, checking elevator shafts, crawl spaces, stairwells, storage areas, and all 140 rooms inside the building. Officers searched every possible place a person could accidentally become trapped or injured. But there was no sign of Karen anywhere. Now outside, conditions were brutal. Snow covered the ground and temperatures had dropped sharply. Investigators believed it would have been extremely difficult for someone to voluntarily wander far from the resort, especially without proper gear. Karen had no car. Her skis were inside the room with her winter clothing. Now, in some areas, the snow was so deep, people reportedly couldn't walk more than 30 feet off the road. Still, there was no trace of her. The disappearance quickly became one of the biggest stories in the area. Pitkin County District Attorney Investigator Michael Fisher interviewed more than 100 guests and employees at the resort, trying to piece together whether anyone had seen something suspicious. Ski patrols searched the surrounding mountain terrain. Plane and bus operators were given Karen's photograph and description in case she attempted to leave the area. But still, investigators found nothing. No witnesses reported screams. No one saw a struggle. No evidence suggested where she had gone. And as happens in many disappearances, suspicion initially turned toward the person closest to her, Dr. Raymond Gadowski. But acquaintances described the couple as happy overall, saying they were planning to marry that spring. Not to mention, many people were with him in the lounge when Karen walked away. And investigators found no evidence of conflict serious enough to explain Karen voluntarily disappearing into a Colorado winter night. Now eventually, with no evidence pointing toward foul play, and no indication of where Karen could have gone, the active search began slowing down. Investigator Fisher famously told reporters, "I've ruled out gypsies, flying saucers, occult people, and cattle rustlers." Now, it's a strange quote, but honestly, it reflected the reality of the case at the time. Karen Campbell's disappearance seemed impossible to explain. Until just over a month later. On February 17, 1975, a passerby noticed birds circling near a snowbank along Owl Creek Road, about 2.8 miles from the Wildwood Inn. Hidden there in the snow was the frozen body of a young woman. The remains were badly decomposed and had suffered severe animal predation, especially to the upper body, making immediate identification difficult. But investigators soon confirmed the victim was Karen Campbell. And what they discovered was horrifying. Karen had been murdered within hours of disappearing from the ski lodge. The autopsy revealed she had been raped, beaten, and strangled. She suffered massive trauma to her head and face from repeated blows with a blunt instrument. Injuries so severe that one of her teeth had reportedly separated from the gums. Marks on her wrist suggest she may have been bound at some point before her death. I mean, this was not an accident. It wasn't exposure to the cold. It wasn't a woman wandering away confused in a snowstorm. This was murder. Before long, investigators would begin connecting Karen's case to a name that would eventually become infamous across America. Theodore Bundy.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
When Karen Campbell's body was discovered in the snow along Owl Creek Road in February of 1975, investigators finally had confirmation of what so many people had feared from the very beginning. Karen had not wandered away from the Wildwood Inn voluntarily. Someone had taken her, and whoever killed her had done it with horrifying violence. At the time, investigators still didn't know exactly who had done it. But years later, they would learn the truth. Karen Campbell was Ted Bundy's 14th verified victim and his first known victim in Colorado. When you really examine the details of Karen's disappearance, it becomes one of the most chilling examples of how terrifyingly confident Ted Bundy had become by that point in his killing spree. Because this wasn't a dark roadside abduction. This wasn't an isolated hiking trail or deserted parking lot. This was a crowded ski resort filled with tourists, medical convention attendees, hotel staff, and families. Karen disappeared from inside a busy lodge in the middle of the evening, surrounded by people. And somehow, Ted Bundy still managed to get her out of that building without anyone realizing what was happening. And part of the reason Bundy was apparently able to operate so stealthily at the Wildwood Inn was because of the resort's unusual open-air design. Unlike a traditional enclosed hotel hallway, the guest rooms were connected by outdoor breezeways and staircases that opened directly to the parking lot below. And investigators believe Bundy likely used that layout to his advantage. According to later theories and Bundy's own confessions before his execution, He may have positioned himself near the exterior staircase adjacent to the elevator Karen used that night. Those stairs reportedly led directly down toward the parking lot, creating a quick and relatively hidden route away from the lodge itself. At the end of his life, Bundy claimed he had been using crutches that evening. Now, that detail is important because Bundy famously used fake injuries to manipulate women into helping him. Witnesses in multiple cases described him pretending to be vulnerable, wearing a cast, using crutches, struggling with books or bags, asking women for help loading items into his car. It was part of the persona he carefully crafted, harmless, polite, injured, trustworthy. And according to Bundy, that's exactly what happened with Karen. He claimed he first approached another woman at the resort asking for assistance carrying his ski boots, but she ignored him. Now later that night, he encountered Karen walking along the breezeway near her room. And this time, she stopped to help. And that detail always hits hard because it feels so human. Karen was a nurse. She was known for being compassionate and caring. Helping someone on crutches probably wouldn't have felt dangerous to her at all. If anything, it probably felt automatic. Now Bundy later claimed that after Karen agreed to help him, they made their way toward his car parked somewhere near the lodge. But there are a few pieces of that story that remain difficult to explain. For one thing, if Bundy truly was on crutches that night, how exactly did he manage to maneuver both himself and Karen down multiple icy exterior staircases without drawing attention? And how did nobody see or hear anything suspicious happening in a crowded ski resort? That's what makes the case feel so eerie. It's almost as if Bundy exploited the exact environment perfectly. The darkness, the snow, the distractions of a busy lodge, the isolated pockets created by the breezeways and stairwells. And then there's what Bundy himself later said happened next. According to his confession, once Karen reached the car, he attacked her with the ski boots. He later described it chillingly and casually, saying, "I did my thing right there in the car." Of course, that statement is absolutely horrifying because of how cold and detached it sounds. But it also raises another unsettling possibility. That Bundy may not have even driven Karen away initially. He may have assaulted and murdered her almost immediately, there in the parking lot near the resort itself. And if that's true, it suggests either the parking lot was surprisingly isolated that night, or Bundy found a very secluded location where nobody would notice what was happening inside the vehicle, despite being only minutes away from hundreds of people. And that means Karen may have been killed within sight of vacationers relaxing by fireplaces, families walking through the snow, and people enjoying a normal winter evening, completely unaware that a predator was operating among them. What's also unusual is the way Karen's body was disposed of afterward. Now, Bundy's crimes often followed recognizable patterns. He frequently revisited dump sites and concealed bodies in wooded areas he knew well. But Karen's body being left in a snowbank along Owl Creek Road was somewhat atypical compared to other Bundy cases. Some investigators have theorized that the winter conditions, unfamiliar terrain, and growing pressure in Colorado may have disrupted his usual behavior. Because by 1975, Bundy's violence was escalating rapidly, and Karen Campbell's murder marked the beginning of an especially dangerous period in his killing spree, one where his confidence seemed to grow alongside his brutality. But what stays with me the most about Karen's case is how incredibly ordinary the final moments probably felt to her. A ski lodge, a quick trip upstairs for a magazine, a man on crutches asking for help. And then, suddenly, she crossed paths with one of the most dangerous predators in modern American history. Not because she made some reckless decision. Not because she was alone in a dangerous place. But because Ted Bundy understood exactly how to weaponize normal human kindness.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba.
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
When people think about Aspen and snowmass, both in 1975 and even today, they usually picture luxury ski vacations, celebrities, expensive chalets, champagne bars, and perfect powder snow. Crime is probably the last thing most people associate with those towns. And that perception isn't entirely wrong. Even in the 1970s, Aspen was viewed as relatively safe compared to major American cities. Violent crime was rare, especially random stranger violence. Most visitors felt comfortable walking around the resort areas late at night, moving between lodges, bars, and restaurants without much fear. That sense of safety was actually part of the appeal. But I think Karen Campbell's case shattered a certain illusion people had about places like Aspen. Because what her murder proved is that wealth, beauty, and exclusivity do not make a place immune to danger. In 1975, Aspen and snowmass were booming. The ski industry was exploding across Colorado, and resorts were bringing in thousands of tourists every winter season. But the reality is, ski towns have always had this strange dual identity. On the surface, they feel glamorous and carefree. Underneath that, they're transient places filled with strangers. People are constantly coming and going. Tourists rotate in every few days. Hotels are packed with people nobody really knows. There's nightlife, alcohol, isolated roads, unfamiliar terrain, and visitors whose routines are disrupted because they're on vacation. And predators understand that. Ted Bundy absolutely understood that. Part of why Karen's disappearance confused investigators so much at first was because snowmass simply did not feel like the kind of place where someone could vanish. There wasn't widespread fear of violent crime there at the time. People left doors unlocked. Guests wandered around resorts late at night. Ski culture in the 70s especially had this very relaxed, trusting atmosphere. And that still exists in a lot of ski towns today. Present-day Aspen and snowmass are still considered relatively safe overall, especially regarding violent crime. Modern statistics show violent crime rates there are significantly lower than national averages. Recent crime data for Aspen reports violent crime rates around 138 per 100,000 residents, well below both Colorado and national averages. But what's interesting is that property crime is actually much higher than people expect. Luxury ski towns tend to attract theft because there's an enormous wealth concentrated in small areas. Expensive cars, designer gear, jewelry, watches, luxury vacation homes, and tourists carrying valuables. Modern Aspen sees far more issues involving theft, burglary, and vehicle break-ins than violent stranger attacks. Property crime rates in Aspen today are notably above the national average. And I think that creates the same psychological trap that existed back in Karen's time. People think this place is wealthy, beautiful, expensive, therefore it must be safe. But safety and luxury are not the same thing. In fact, vacation environments can sometimes lower people's guard completely. You're relaxed, drinking, distracted, out of routine, trusting strangers more easily because everyone around you seems affluent or educated or friendly. And that's why Karen's story still feels relevant today. Because Ted Bundy didn't force his way into some dark alley in a dangerous neighborhood. He operated inside an upscale ski resort where people felt comfortable enough to help strangers. And one of the biggest lessons from cases like Karen's is understanding that danger rarely looks dangerous in the moment, especially in tourist locations. Aspen and snowmass remain incredibly popular vacation spots. People ski, snowboard, shop downtown, go snowmobiling, visit luxury spas, hike maroon bells, eat at high-end restaurants, and move between crowded resorts and nightlife areas. Millions of visitors pass through every year. The towns are heavily policed, but modern safety experts still recommend many of the same precautions travelers are told everywhere else. Don't leave drinks unattended. Be cautious helping strangers alone at night. Avoid walking isolated resort paths or parking in areas by yourself after dark. Share your location with people you trust. use hotel deadbolts and locks. And one that I think matters most in vacation towns specifically. Don't let the atmosphere convince you that normal instincts no longer apply. Because vacation mode changes people psychologically. You feel freer, more trusting, less alert. And predators count on that. The truth is, Aspen and Snowmass are not dangerous places in the way people often imagine dangerous cities. Most visitors will never experience violent crime there. But Karen's case is this haunting reminder that evil does not only exist in places that look dangerous. Sometimes, it walks through luxury ski resorts wearing a cast and smiling politely. And I think that's why part of her story still lingers in people's minds 50 years later. I think one of the hardest things about stories like Karen Campbell's is that over time, the victims can become overshadowed by the people who hurt them. People recognize Ted Bundy's name immediately. They know the headlines, the documentaries, the mythology built around him. But Karen was a real person long before she ever became part of a true crime story. She was a 23-year-old nurse from Michigan who loved skiing, traveling, and spending time outdoors. She was close with her family. She worked hard for her career. She was engaged and planning a future. I think true crime can sometimes lose sight of that. It becomes easy to focus on perpetrators because they're shocking or infamous. But the people at the center of these stories are the victims. The lives interrupted, the futures stolen, the families forever changed. Karen should have gotten to grow older. She should have gotten married. She should have had more ski trips, more holidays, more ordinary moments that most of us take for granted. And maybe the most meaningful thing we can do when we tell stories like hers is to make sure people leave remembering her name, not the man who took her life. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/The Last Trip Podcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.